This is a Friday edition of Ozarks at Large. For scholars in several countries, teaching can be difficult or even dangerous. Scholars at Risk is an international organization dedicated to protecting scholars who are threatened with job loss, imprisonment, or even death because of their work. The University of Arkansas chapter of Scholars at Risk this week hosted Dr. Muhammad Khan, a professor of applied linguistics who now teaches in Philadelphia. This after he received death threats in his native Pakistan for work in the classroom that some considered critical of religion. Recently, he came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio with Luis Fernando Restrepo, the University of Arkansas Scholars at Risk committee chairman. Muhammad Khan says he faced several threats of intimidation when he was in Pakistan.
And that sends a strong message to the academic community that they should actually be more engaged in their own world and should not try to reach out to common public. So it kind of gives a view of an academia, of an ivory tower, where what they are doing with the society are two different things. You know what I'm trying to say? So no social responsibility on the academic to reach out to general public. So if you're doing that kind of work, you're publishing in peer-reviewed journals, which nobody get to read, that's fine. But once you start writing in newspapers and blogs, then you're in an open forum.
This happens much more often than we'd like to think, doesn't it?
Yes, that is true, absolutely. And this is something that has happened a lot on the transformation of the university worldwide, more into experts than public intellectuals. And we really need public intellectuals to have our ideas. And sometimes academics are at fault by having a very technical language that it becomes very difficult for the general public, but our goal, specifically in the humanities, is to have a voice for the public good.
How can scholars at risk committees, whether it be at the University of Arkansas or many other places around the world, help?
Okay. Scholars at Risk has a yearly program that they produce a report on all the threats they keep on all the threats to scholars worldwide. So we know what are the situations, where are the critical issues, where faculty are being displaced, imprisoned, so forth. So for us to be aware of that and a call to the international community to be in solidarity, because this could be happening to us. We have a responsibility to our own students, to our state and country, but also to the global community, because I think an injustice anywhere is really, if other people cannot speak, we are being censored too. We're not getting the whole picture of what is going around. So that's one way that they do it. They also help to relocate scholars.
That's right.
And this is really important because you want people to continue doing their academic work, not just leave, because it is kind of a living death to prepare, go into academia, become an expert, and have to stop doing it. That if that's your passion, your calling,
that's right.
It's a loss.
I want to just go back to what Luis has just said, the responsibility of academia and the language that the academia actually uses it. A little bit of a history, you know, and the Humboldt Research Institute in Germany was a very famous institute for its autonomy. I mean, the professors were the governing people in the universities. And in that model of Humboldt model, that the academia is a place where a student and the professors have a freedom to think and publish, but within the academia. So in that model, I mean, anyone who goes outside the academia would consider non-academic, like somebody writing a blog would be considered a non-academic, thereby not protected by academic freedom. But what happened, American Association of Professors, they kind of extended the scope. They said, well, who decides academic and non-academic? It's the academia should be deciding it, and a professor has the responsibility actually to reach out and raise the wisdom of a common man. So that model is no longer effective in US or in other world parts of the world like Canada and like Norway, I have friends working in that. We now think that, yes, we respect data-heavy analysis, peer-reviewed journal, yes, but we also have the responsibility to reach out to general public. And that should also be protected by academic freedom.
How difficult was it for you? Because on one hand, you do want to continue to educate and engage with students. But on the other hand, you're getting these text messages and these letters.
Yes.
I mean, the internal struggle you went through must have been severe.
Yes. It was a great sense of insecurity, and it was very, very difficult for my wife. She felt so insecure. And we actually did not communicate to our kids so explicitly. We did tell them that, you know, situation, and kids had some idea that what was going on, because out in the streets, you know, the people in the street, they did tell to my kids that we have never seen your dad in a mosque. So what kind of faith do you guys belong to? And I'm so grateful to Scholar at Risk. They came at my support when I was alone. I had that sense I was very lonely. I had no direction. And it was not just verbal. They actually helped me settle down in this country. I mean, they're really good friends now. Yeah, so I'm hugely thankful to SAR, Scholar at Risk.
No doubt you probably see some of us in this country maybe take for granted some of the freedoms or the rights or the... Does that ever become frustrating for you?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. You know what? It's great to see that, you know, I can teach these critical reading and critical writing and everything, you know, in my classes. I have no fear. But at the same time, I also see sometimes that people in this country where there is so much of freedom and respected, there's so much of protection, elements sometimes misuse freedom of speech, and they kind of transgress the boundary line. Let me give you an example. A group of students, they show up and in the college campus and they start chanting slogans against a faith, a minority faith, and they bring play cards and they ridicule it. And I was just thinking, is it really free speech, or free speech should be seen in context with other things that the university offers? And for me, I came to the conclusion that it's probably weaponization of free speech sometimes, I would call it, because what you're doing is you are actually offending people by over-interpreting one free speech. So if I want to see free speech, then I also have to see other constitutional things which actually protect and give protection to minority faiths. So although I do not subscribe to any faith, but I have a lot of respect for people, whether they're majority or minority faiths. So I see a different kind of problem here. It's over-interpretation of freedom of speech, and I would say not over-interpretation, exploitation of freedom of speech when you start actually hurting communities.
Do you think there's a connection here? Because the threats you experienced in your native country were coming, we presume, from the very powerful, those
right.
in power. The examples you're using here are people who are in the majority, presumably mm-hmm. more powerful than those who are not in the majority.
Right.
So you have this sort of exploitation of power.
That's right.
In both of these cases.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes, I see this. Yes.
I think for many of us here, the case of, I don't know if I'm going to say her name correctly, Azizia Bibi.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who has just, as you and I are talking, been released.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Not a scholar, yeah. but a woman who was on death row.
Yes.
For blasphemy.
Yes.
I mean,
let me tell you one thing. Some people were saying, you know, that Pakistan, there is a rise of liberal voices because of the change of the government. And Asia Bibi's case is so telling about the entire society that as she was acquitted by the Supreme Court, within hours, the entire country was blocked. And they blocked all the streets And it was completely blocked within hours for 3 days. That shows that how organized these radical groups are. We're talking about liberalism. I know that it's a great country. There are a lot of liberal forces. But probably we'll have to go and see the seeds which were sown 30 years and has been constantly watered. These are huge trees. You cannot cut them. And they showed up. And they blocked the whole country so much so that the prime minister and the judiciary, they're all helpless. What can you do now? So that's a show. That tells how powerful, how organized. They may be a small group, but they are very organized. And they showed it. Around 30 hours ago, the whole country was blocked.
Finally, do you hear conversations in 2018 among students or colleagues about freedoms, not just here but around the world? Are these conversations that you're part of?
Yes, I do. I mean, here specifically, our discussion that we have is in relation to hate speech. Mm. I mean, that's been the relationship on campuses. It's been very much what the discussion you have. And to what extent can you still have freedom of expression without having to police that? I mean, who is the one that polices? And when it becomes, I think that the analogy that you use, language being weaponized, how do we use language, you know, in a way that it's constructively? So it is hard here as our students try to address different topics, I guess, even in class, as we try to address what is going on in our country, is difficult as well. So I think as academics, we are there trying to walk those lines of not trying to self-censor, but not to accept hate speech specifically. So mm-hmm. How can I be teaching Spanish and not address to my Latino students that there are voices from the top of the country insulting a whole community and portraying a whole community as criminal, as gangs? How can you not address those things and be supposedly maintain an academic, neutrality when you're being assaulted mm-hmm. by language, and how to respond in a way that it is within academic discourse, that is reasonable, that is open, that you're not forcing students to do that. So you're always trying to be very respectful, but I would say we need to defend academia and its ability, especially public universities. To teach at a public university is a great responsibility and a privilege, and we should not self-censor.
The ability to have these discussions, key,
yes,
right?
Absolutely. Yes, without any fear.
Thank you both for coming in.
Yeah, what a pleasure. Thanks for having us here.
Thank you for having us, Kyle.
Muhammad Khan teaches applied linguistics in Philadelphia after Scholars at Risk helped him leave his native Pakistan, where he received death threats. We also heard from Luis Fernando Restrepo, the chair of the University of Arkansas Scholars at Risk Committee.